I run the family business.
I run the family.
Florida politics is my playground.
I walked away from it all in favor of the politics of the playground.
Neither of us suffers from a lack of opinions.
This is
He Said,
She Said.
All right, in the quick spirit of Memorial Day, we're doing an interview with Ella Joyce.
Everyone's favorite Shorsh.
It's the second time she's joined us. Ella, you want to say hi to the audience?
Hi.
All right, so this was a big week for Ella. Last week, she graduated from kindergarten. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
About Fossil Park Swimming Pool. There's cupcakes with every graduate's name and face. And there's a diving board, and I went on it like 1,000 times.
You went on the diving board 1,000 times?
Yeah. And I went on the water slide.
Who had those cupcakes made for your kindergarten graduation?
Mama.
It was the end of a incredible, like, 6-day run for Michelle. You had the Girl Scout.
End of the year party at Build-A-Bear for cookie rewards. And Ella, what do you want to say to everyone who bought cookies from you?
Thanks.
Why do you want to say thank you?
For my waterproof camera.
That's right. She won a GoPro for selling so many cookies. Ella, how was the Build-A-Bear party that you got to go to with cookie rewards?
Amazing.
Did your other troop members like it?
Yeah.
You know that you earned all the money to pay for that party?
What?
Yes. Thank you to everyone listening who bought cookies.
She's amazed. All right. And so this weekend, we brought Ella Joyce over because this is what we're rewarding. It wasn't the year end. It was she went through an entire year and she did not have her clip brought down the entire school year. And the clip is how they, you know, they measure behavior every day. And
it's classroom management system. They have a clip chart that goes up or down based on how children behave.
And she never went down.
But only where I should not have got my clip down.
There was one day when her teacher moved everyone's clip down. That's right.
It's the worst day ever.
It's still not letting it go.
And I was 9 years, so I should have, but I got back up in Spanish, and I might have got it back on yellow.
Thank God.
And so yesterday, we decided to reward Ella Joyce with a very special day. Ella, tell us where you went yesterday on Saturday. Starting out, we're in Orlando, and then we surprised you. What was the first stop?
American Girl.
All right. And what did you do at American Girl?
I got my American Girl's hair.
Styled?
Hair styled. Her nails painted and her ears pierced.
And how long do you have to keep her earrings in before you're allowed to change them so her earring piercings don't close up?
Two days.
Wow. And then so American Girl, if we're already at the Florida Mall, what do we do after we go to the Florida Mall? There's another couple of places that you like to stop off at. What was the next one?
Build-A-Bear.
And what did you build?
A horsey.
What's your horse's name?
Sprinkle.
Of course. All right. And then you turn right out of Build-A-Bear and you head to, what's the best attraction over here at this mall?
The best attraction in Orlando. Forget Disney World.
Crayola World.
Also known as the Crayola Experience.
Just a real quick shout out from us. If you're in Orlando, you're staying over and you don't want to go to the Mouse, you don't want to go to Universal.
It's a great air-conditioned amusement park that's really creative. It's for younger kids. If your kids are outside of elementary school, they're not going to want to do it. And they've done a lot of upgrades to the park. There's a couple of new attractions that they just opened yesterday. We were some of the first guests to participate in the Scribble Scrubby Puppies or something.
When are you looking to stay at that mall or the hotel at the mall?
Scribble Scrubby Puppy thing is just where you use washable markers and you draw on toy puppies and you wash them off. And then when you wash them off, you can redraw on them.
Okay. And do you ever want to stay at the hotel at that mall? Because it kind of looks a little scary. It doesn't look like up to your standards.
Only if we can go to Crayola, Crayola World, American Girl, and Build-A-Bear, and that's Crayola Carlos Bakery.
And was that the last stop that we went to, was Carlos Bakery?
Yep.
Where was it at?
Carlos Bakery.
And what did you get there?
Chocolate rainbow cake.
Excellent. All right, well, Ella Joyce, thank you so much for joining us today. Did you have something else you wanted to say with your beautiful little face?
Yeah.
What else did you want to say?
I love cake.
She loves cake.
And with that, that's the end of the special report from Ella Joyce Schorsch. Welcome to a very special edition of He Said, She Said, live from the Ritz-Carlton and JW Marriott in Grand Lakes, Orlando on Memorial Day weekend. We are celebrating happy hour with some of our best friends. And when we were first talking about doing a podcast, Peter always envisioned that it would be more of a casual conversation during happy hour, honey.
Correct. And you got me for Christmas all the gear I needed to do podcasting on the road. So bear with us. We're still learning everything, but I got the Tascam system. I've got GarageBand. It's kind of exciting. We're working on, you know, all the kinks out of the system. But if this goes well, we're going to take this show on the road.
Well, at least to the decks of the Disney Magic
exactly.
From Europe.
That is the dream, is to be able to just podcast all the time from the cruise life.
And today we're joined by some actual political friends, someone that you all have recently heard from on our last episode. Stephanie Smith from Uber is back with us again. Hello.
And now we have, this is like Mount Rushmore of Florida politics. This will be a heavily downloaded episode just because people will want to... They'll want to hear from him. I'm just going to set him up. Everybody who has worked in Florida politics, first of all, they probably have worked for him at some point or another. But Jim Rimes, longtime friend of both Michelle and I, Stephanie, he was an executive director of the party, one of the top consultants in the party still, and just one of our good friends. So
thanks for having me. Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
And Jim kind of put this whole thing together.
Jim did. He did put the whole weekend together. And here's the other fun thing about it is Jim is the first person I ever sent my resume to in politics to apply for a job. Max Stepanovich gave me my first letter of recommendation. And he said, if you want to work for Charlie Crist, send your resume to this guy, Jim. Jim never replied to my email, but he hired Stephanie Smith.
I don't know if that's a good thing for Jim or...
It's hilarious because I got Stephanie out of the deal. So it's kind of like a fun part of the origin story. I don't harbor any ill will over it.
All right. And let's say hi real quick. She's part of the earlier podcast.
Ella!
Ella is in the background. She is our sidekick. She's doing really great. Also joining us at this VIP roundtable...
And we'll be on Hallmark Channel tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. We will talk about that. Eric Eichenberg is in the building, which is the Everglades Foundation CEO, which is kind of interesting. And so we wanted to introduce our other friends who joined us. So Jim has got his family in the background. We decided to bring over basically our family, Amanda and Derek Houston, our attorneys.
Amanda Taylor and Derek Houston of Houston Taylor Law, Ella's aunt and uncle, and our best friends.
Michelle got the plug-in right, so we appreciate that. But we're happy to join this illustrious crowd here.
Derek, are you going to say anything? I mean, you've had a big week with your, a big month at least, with the purchase of your new boat, which is the only thing that really matters.
Exactly. So I'm welcome to chime in on that at any point, and I will give comments on that.
You and I are going to start our own podcast, How to Destroy a Boat in a Year, because it seems like we've achieved that.
But we need to mention the Sandbar and the Sandbar crew, and thank you for their efforts.
We all have a boat together. It did run two Memorial Days ago, and that was great. That was a great time. I remember it fondly.
I haven't actually been on it running, I think, since then, but that's okay. That's why I no longer want a boat on holidays.
Right. Well, we're so happy for you all that you guys got a new boat for us.
All right, since it's happy hour, everybody, let's go around and introduce ourselves one last time and share with our listeners what our drink of choice is on this holiday weekend. I am very... basic. I have my champagne, but please don't serve me Prosecco. I only actually drink champagne.
Of course, I'm drinking, everybody knows, dirty martinis, super dirty. Basically, I'm drinking Kettle Up, very dirty.
This is Stephanie Smith, and I am also having champagne tonight.
This is Jim, and I've always got a rum drink, so I've got a rum cooler here at the JW Marriott.
Derek, and I am rocking the Manhattan with the Basil Hayden, I believe.
And this is Amanda, and I have a very boring Chardonnay, but I did drink a mimosa on the way over here because I have to have my Florida orange juice.
But what happened to your, like, spicy habanero pepper margarita that you normally like?
I may have had one of those last night, or two, maybe three. That's enough, though. They're good. They're spicy. They're good.
Ella, your apple juice.
Oh, that's perfect.
Thank you, baby girl.
Stephanie Smith, you have today, we've been out at the world's weirdest, what is that out there? I don't even.
Lazy River.
Lazy River.
Crazy cocktail party by
Sign of the Apocalypse. What was going on there?
Derek and Amanda, be glad you missed the pool scene because it was frightening.
You had a variety of drinks. I just want to point that out for the audience that you're an interesting drinker on pool day. First of all, credit to Stephanie. She got out here at 9 a.m. to secure beach chairs out there. We were still in bed, and we were in bed until about 10:30, 11, and then we finally...
That is not accurate. Ella woke up at 9. We were all out at the pool by 10:15. Thank you.
All right, fine. But kudos to Stephanie for getting out there so early. You had a nice little variety of cocktails today. Why don't you run us down? Like, what were you thinking mixing a Corona Extra Tall Boy with a Myers Rum, whatever Jim ordered? What was that cocktail?
I'm very flexible. I just go with what is I'm feeling. I'm not just a one drink. So I have definitely had a Corona Light. I had a mimosa. At some point, I had a Miami Vice with a Myers floater. I had two White Claws with Tito vodka floaters, and now champagne.
Now, is that part of your efforts for Uber? Like, you're trying to show people, do this, and then Uber responsibly later in the night. Now, Jim, you knocked us all off. Like, you came in around 2:30, ordered a round, and everybody went home afterwards.
There's no frozen drink with a little umbrella that's not better with a Myers floater on top.
All right, so enough about our drinking habits. I get that it's happy hour and it's a holiday, but we do have a lot of political minds around the table, and we always have some, like, pretty crazy stories when we get together, so that's why it's nice for us all to travel from our different parts of the states to be together. I want to start with Jim. Jim, what is your craziest political story that you actually can share on a podcast?
That's a good question. You know, the scariest political story was... all of us, I think, Stephanie, I think you were on the plane. We had just finished a bus tour in 06, I believe it was. We were coming out of Miami, and we were going, there was five or six of us on the plane going back to Tallahassee. We take off, we're out and over the Everglades, and suddenly the cabin starts to fill with what we thought was smoke and get very loud and very hot. And then it stops, you know, just shuts off. And then we're all kind of looking at each other like you and I are right now.
Yeah, I'm really glad that my daughter's doing cartwheels right now, not listening.
It happens again. Now, meanwhile, the plane's completely stable, but the cabin's filling with smoke. And we're all looking at each other. Finally, we go to the pilot. You know, can we just land, please, over in Fort Myers? And they wouldn't land. They took us all the way to Tallahassee, but it had been...
Was Charlie on the plane with you guys when the pilot refused to land?
It was all staff. He had gone on to do something else. And we were all, it was like, it was six or eight of us. It was all staff going back. And it turned out to be really nothing major. It was some sort of a pressure relief valve. And so it was scary, but it worked out okay.
Hasn't Charlie had a few of those episodes over the time he's been in the governor's?
He has, I know. I mean, Stephanie probably knows better, but I know he definitely likes two engines on.
Absolutely. He has a two-engine minimum on any private plane you hire for him.
Were you chief of staff? You made it up to chief of staff?
No, I was deputy chief of staff.
Okay, so you did all the work and...
No, we had a good team. Everybody worked hard.
Was that under Eric Eichenberg?
No, it was George. It was the first 6 months, and then I went over to the party.
The maestro. It was his birthday.
Yeah.
He's a frequent listener. He punches in and tells us what a good job it was. All right, Smith, what's your craziest tale?
But don't steal mine.
No. I think one of my favorite memories is 2006, into the campaign, election night. Everybody's having a really good time at the Vinoy in St. Pete. And next day, everybody wakes up and leaves. And there's equipment. There are rental cars. There are all types of things there that were just left. And so one of my favorite memories is driving, you know, 5-6 cars back to the rental car to Avis and returning boxes of equipment that were left in the different rooms. But it's one of those fun memories that, like, you know, we all had a good time. We were all celebrating. We all needed to take a break.
Joining us now also is Jim's sister. They're here this weekend. So in case you hear that in the ambient, Michelle, you wanted to, you have a good scary story that you want to share?
It's not scary, but it's a funny story. It's actually the first event I ever did. One of the things that you get tortured with on a campaign trail oftentimes are parades in the high heat of summer in Florida. And my first parade was the 4th of July parade in Brandon, and it was Stephanie's event. She borrowed a red Hummer from Hank Gill. Hank didn't fill up the gas tank. So we are on the parade route. And if you've ever been in a parade, you idle for a while. Like, you're just a lot of, like, waiting around before you get to go. And Stephanie looks down and is like, oh, shit, the gas light's on. And the parade hasn't even started yet. So one of the lovely volunteers goes and gets some canisters of gas. And at this, because we cannot go to a gas station at this point, but the parade has started. So we have to start driving with the gas light on. And then he shows back up with the canisters of gas, and he's filling up the gas tank as we're driving on a parade route. And all I keep thinking is, Charlie Crist is never going to get elected if we blow up this parade. Just keep throwing footballs. Just keep throwing footballs so people don't know that we're pouring gas into a gas tank.
All right, I'm looking at the three of you, and we only have the two mics. We're in a different setup today. Which one of you thinks that they have driven the most miles on behalf of candidate / Governor Crist?
Having started in 98 with the Senate campaign, I would be in contention. I'm not sure if it's the most, but in 98, our bus tour was a mobile home tour. We could borrow a mobile home from somebody, and we woke up in one morning in Panama City and ended the day in Naples with signs taped all over it. So that may be close to it. Stephanie, you?
I had a lot of Bay Area, Pasco County, back and forth trips. And one of those, I think this goes in the story department, I was driving him, and he made me pull over on a bridge to get out so he could drive because I wasn't driving fast enough.
I did have 13 counties as a special assistant that included his hometown and the lieutenant governor's hometown. So I did drive a lot because they both happened to go back to their hometowns a lot. And then let's not forget, I did do the independent Senate campaign with only 9 staffers. And yes, I've also had Charlie make me pull over on the side of the interstate, but that was because he wanted to put yard signs out on I-4.
Well, so my question about the signs, I remember Dane Eagle, who is now State Representative Dane Eagle, but was Charlie's driver back in the day, were giving us stories about needing to pull over to straighten up the big 4x8 signs. Who else had that experience?
Listen, just so you know, Charlie still installs his own 4x8 signs. He's so particular about it. You can see him on any given Sunday during campaign season putting out his own 4x8. So that has not changed. So if you ever see someone who looks kind of like a politician digging holes in the side of the road in St. Petersburg, that's likely Congressman Charlie Crist.
I think the worst job in politics is being Charlie's sign chairman. I think of Joe Triola had that job for years. And Charlie, it's almost like he feels it in the universe that his 4x4 or his 4x8 is down on 54th Avenue South, and he knows it, and he will call you at any given point. And interesting question for you guys, because you guys are now masters of the universe. It's kind of not a Crist reunion tour right now, but it is interesting seeing Shane Strum and seeing so many Crist alumni back in the process. Give us your assessment on how you think Governor DeSantis, who right now is in Israel, how do you think his first couple of months are going as governor?
I've been extremely pleased. I think that the staff and the folks that he's brought on his leadership team are extremely qualified, some of the best in the state. And for him to have brought some of those members back, and even some of those that have come from even Governor Bush's time, you know, Secretary Marsteller, I've been really excited to see those talented folks back. I've been extremely pleased with the first 100 plus days.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's put together a great team, great administration. Shane's there, you know, working hard, obviously. Our friend and former Brandis team member, Chris Spencer, they're working on policy.
Still mad that Chris left the Berg, just saying.
Doing an outstanding job, and I think, you know, him working with the legislature, we had a great session, business agenda, conservative agenda, you know, everybody should be happy.
So last night we were, like, telling different fun stories, and Jim, you managed to bring up something that I thought was a little bit interesting. You were talking about a last-minute trip you took somewhere, and that's not what mattered, but you brought up a Cuba bag. Can you tell our listeners what you were talking about, a Cuba Go bag?
Well, I was Deputy Chief of Staff, 2007, and if you remember back to that time, everybody was, we were kind of on hair trigger alert for Fidel Castro passing away. So Vivian Martinez, a good friend of ours, communications director, she always had a go bag in her office because you never knew when, you know, she and the governor were going to have to hop on a plane and go to Miami to deal with Fidel Castro dying. So it was interesting times.
It's interesting. He's under a little controversy right now for having gone over there. Governor Chris was over there during the Venezuela uprising. And so it's interesting. Like, I think Charlie, 6 years from now, if he stays in Congress, which I think he very much will, he could be at that, not the upper echelon of leadership, like, you know, speaker or whatever, but he will be at that. I could see where he is conference chairman or a number four or five slot. I could absolutely see him running the DCCC, not this cycle, not next cycle, but after the Pelosi, Steny Hoyer administration kind of goes away. And I think it is going to be interesting for Charlie what he does in 2024 when the next round of U.S. Senate seats come up. Because I think, I hate to say it, I think Rick Scott, Charlie Crist, there is a round two there. So it'll be kind of interesting there.
Okay, so we don't need to make this the Charlie Crist podcast. Let's pivot a little bit to some other political stuff. Legislative session just ended. And so we're already, of course, looking towards next cycle, the presidential election. Should we get any predictions from people, Peter? What do you think?
Are you going to dive into predictions? I mean, you're kind of...
Well, no, we don't have to talk about candidates. We can even talk about, like, what do we think the big issue is going to be next legislative session? Do we think any other bills are going to get vetoed? What do we think? No? You don't like any of that?
Hold on. Let's just start. You just set me up on that
their
one. I was just...
You went
right from, like, nice Chris talk to... Now I'm going to talk about, you know what's going to be a big issue? That damn abortion bill. Because I'll tell you what, like, I think the one thing that it... No, I'm on there.
Oh,
I'm going.
On? Oh,
I'm... We're going live.
Awesome.
This is some Bill O'Reilly stuff. Fuck it. I'll take it live. I think the big issue is what threatens the majority, and we were talking about this earlier, is if they do the abortion bill.
I just want to chime in real quick. Anything we say, our guests are not agreeing with. It's not their politics. I just want to make it very clear. Right. Sorry. Okay.
We're definitely not going to be talking about certain business developments or anything like that with Uber or anything like that. I want to stay away from that. I don't want to have to cut from 81.6 on this meter when I talk about the IPO and my stock and all that stuff. No, but I do think that the thing that could hurt them is the abortion stuff. But I know what Jim Rimes is going to agree with me with. I don't really think there is as much of a threat. I think the Democrats are always, you nailed the 2018 race down to the thousandth of the vote. And all the talk that you hear now about the Democrats are going to do this in Florida, the Democrats are going to do that. I don't see a lot of opportunity for them to even do that in Florida.
I don't either. I think that's a constant refrain we hear every cycle. And while Florida is always going to be close, you know, what I can tell you is our side, the Trump campaign and the folks at the party are doing an outstanding job and are already gearing up in a way that it's going to be, you know, bigger and better than it was last cycle, more organized than when President Trump ran the first time, because we already know who the nominee is, essentially. And the Democrats have 20 candidates. They kind of suffer from what we did last time, and they've got a lot of work to do.
You know, I look at the field, and yes, it's Biden, but then once you get past Biden, like, if it is Bernie Sanders, she and I are gone. Like, we will vote for Trump again.
Don't say we will vote for Trump again. I have never voted for Donald Trump for anything in my life.
Sorry. Make America great again. I forgot it.
It's already been great. So, like, please stop with that shit.
I was in the pool line today, and there was something that... What was it? It was something that was spelled MAGA. or close to MAGA. And Ella asked what MAGA is, and Michelle and I got it. I'm like, oh, it's this amazing thing. And she's, no, it's not. And I'm like, please, let's not get beaten up at the pool today over a MAGA debate. Smith, what about you? What are you looking for out of the Democrats, if anything, going into this next, you know, presidential? You don't have to be specific. I don't want to get you too narrowed in, but
we are not asking you who you're voting for or any of those things.
I get it. I think, I mean, honestly, thinking from a corporate perspective, I mean, you're basically, we're in times right now that are really difficult, right? So it's like you're constantly walking this fine line of, you know, being pulled in different directions or being pulled into issues that, quite frankly, don't have anything to do with your line of work. And so, you know, from a national standpoint, I don't know. We're definitely watching and watching what they're saying on the issues, but trying to stay out of, you know, some of the more controversial pieces.
All right. I know somebody that does want to weigh in on this issue. We got some corporate gobbledygook right there about she didn't want to say anything.
Listen,
you know what?
She's gone corporate.
Amanda Taylor, what do you think about making America great again?
Well, as Michelle already pointed out, America has always been great. We don't need to make America great again. But I mean, as far as Democratic candidates, we have way too many in the field at the moment. It's just ridiculous. I mean, I know, like 23
there's
or 23 something.
Candidates.
I think
or
there's 23,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's somewhere between 22 and 24.
There's 20, somewhere between 22 and 24. Well, that'd be 23. And did you see that none of them are going to be here, not this week, but the week after for the Democratic gala?
So why are we going to that?
To see Ashley Walker and Beth Matuga and do a podcast?
And why are they not here, though? I would think Florida would be a state they would think is still in play. Why would they not show up?
You want to know why?
Tell us
it's
more,
the
Michelle.
Same reason why Democrats don't win Florida very often, because the Democratic Party didn't look at the calendar when they were planning this event and see that it might have been a really major event in Iowa, like, you know, the most important state in presidential primary politics. So of course, none of the Democratic candidates are coming to Florida. They have to be in Iowa that weekend.
So clearly this is a Republican table other than... Well, it goes to show you they're just not organized. It's not only that they're not organized. I think they are so far removed from the center at this point. They have so radicalized over the last 5 years that I think that they, after you get past Biden, after you get past, I don't even want to say like a Kamala Harris, they are so to the left. And it's just like, as somebody who is, I would like to vote for a Democrat. Jim and I were talking about this earlier. I'm just tired of Trump. And not in like the, like, I think he does bad things or anything like that. I just don't want somebody in my life this much. I just don't want anybody tweeting. Anybody that tweeted at me this much, I would mute at this point. Like, I just don't want this much out of, in fact, Andrew Sullivan makes a very good argument. Being a conservative is not having to think about government. And we are having to think about government all of the time with this guy. I just want to live my life. And I don't want to have to worry about whether soybean tariffs are going to knock the price. Like, you know, they're talking about we're not going to be able to do fireworks on July 4th because the price of fireworks is going to be impacted by the tariffs. And I don't even know if that's true. I don't want to think about that, though. I just want to live my life. And I feel like if you could give me any president, somebody that would say, I'm going to get elected and I'm going to go away for, you know, you're going to hear from me on my weekly Saturday address and I'll pop in whenever the Libyans are up to some trouble.
And a shout out to the soybean farmers out there, because we don't have any of those in Florida. But if anybody's listening from the Midwest, you know, I mean, it's the same thing. Those guys don't want to think about it either. They don't want to think about tariffs or if they're getting a payout from the government. They don't want it. They want the markets that are open to them. They want to be able to export and send out soybeans if they want to. They don't want to play these games either. And so I think you do have a lot of them that are actually quite frustrated about it. They don't want to be pawns in a trade war. Agriculture is almost always the sticking point in any trade negotiations. You can get down to any kind of rounds that you've gone down to, and in the end, agriculture.
We've never had this much agriculture talk on our podcast ever. This is amazing.
Yes, we have. We've had the Commissioner of Agriculture on our podcast. And much like Amanda's the only Democrat at our table, the only Democrat to hold statewide office in Florida is the Commissioner of Agriculture, Nikki Fried. And so, as Amanda says, it's all about agriculture. Back to you, Amanda.
It can be. I mean, like I said, ag trade in the end, that's usually the sticking point because everybody wants to protect their farmers and everybody also wants to get the markets open for their farmers as well. So, yeah, the president has put a lot of the guys who depends on exports in a precarious position.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. Let's talk agriculture for a minute. Why can't we just eat what we're all growing in our country and stop tariffing each other? Like, do the Chinese, do they just not have enough of their own food?
They don't. So here's the thing about the Chinese. Obviously, they have a very large population. They can't feed the population that they have. Of course, I don't know if you've paid attention right now. They have had to kill off a decent percentage of their pork.
People.
No, their pork. Their hogs, not people. Their hogs because they've had a epidemic of an Ebola-type virus that's in their hogs. It's very bad. So they've had to kill off, I think they think about 20% of their hogs at the moment. And they may creep on up to about 30% or more. So, and of course, the Chinese, they eat a lot of pork. They depend on us.
I love sweet and sour pork.
They do as well.
From Great Wall of China. That is my favorite.
Yeah. China Walk 2. So.
Is that culturally inappropriate?
Yeah. So actually what they will want from us is actually pork at the moment.
Stephanie's asking if she can delete her whole segment from this podcast at this point. She's just like, why don't you just cut it where I was in? And then.
No, this is actually
so what
very
about
true.
The rest of the countries then too? Like, why do we have tariffs with France and.
Well, because. Most all of the European Union, they're actually very protectionist of their farmers. They're more protectionist than we are. You know, people ought to think that in the U.S. we have a lot of price supports and other things that protect our farmers. But the EU and Japan actually protect their farmers more than we do.
I always wondered what was going on with the tariffs. Like, I don't understand what goes on with steel either. I guess the Chinese just make all the cheap steel. Do you know of? Is that where that's all coming from as well?
I don't know that area that much. But yeah, the end game of any kind of ag tariffs are always that they're trying to protect their producers. But we also want trade in that they want some of the production that we have that they want, i.e. pork and soybeans.
Oh, do you want to mix it around a little bit or do we want to have another segment on pork? Are we going to take an intermission here to do a...
No, we're just taking drink orders. It's happy hour. Like, I'm not going to pretend like we're not drinking.
I didn't see the waitress. I'm sorry. We've never done this before. I haven't done...
Never had a happy hour?
Wow, this is going to be more agriculture. I love it.
Well, just the question I had, and at least my understanding of it, was that part of the reason that the tariffs are important to us is because agriculture is one of our major exports. Like, we want to break down these barriers because we grow more than a lot of other countries. So
you're exactly right.
We're fighting for our markets in other countries.
Exactly. We want to be able to export. We are a big agricultural producer. We want to see our exports go out. And a lot of times we are cut out of markets because, again, those countries are protecting their farmers. And so they're protecting their farmers. They don't want us to come in and undercut it. But I think the problem, a lot of what's going on right now with the tariffs and some of the trade wars, is sometimes I think we live in a vacuum, and it's kind of like, oh, if we cut off production and we can't export out to you, you'll be coming back begging us for more. And they will go find other markets. There may not be countries that produce as much as we do, i.e. like the soybeans. Brazil may not produce as much as we do, but they do produce, and they're looking for export markets too. So all of this goes on. It's not in a vacuum. Somebody's going to come in, step in,
fill it in.
Yep.
I've got this feature on my Tascam here where I can do like sound effects, and you are getting close to.
I'm getting gonged?
No.
A cow sound.
He's going to like gong me off of here. But here, just a little shout out to Florida agricultural producers, the NAFTA 2.0, the USMCA, or
whatever. What do you think about Nikki Fried's first couple of months in office?
We're big fans of Nikki Fried and her staff. And, oh, wait, we haven't done a podcast since Stephanie Lewis McClung and Reggie Cardozo had their baby. So welcome to the world, Sutton James Cardozo. Stephanie is Nikki's external affairs director. That's how I got there. Sorry for the very roundabout way to welcome a baby to the world.
That's right. Welcome to the FDEX family.
What's the agricultural community's take on the first couple of months? Has there been any impact yet? Are they seeing any difference between what Adam was doing and what Nikki Frieda's doing
yet? I think everybody's trying to fill it out at the moment, just sort of see where it all goes. Nobody in agriculture is ever going to be negative to anyone that is in that position, especially even if you come in and say, hey, I don't know a lot about agriculture, but I'm willing to learn. That's the person we want in there, because if you will listen to us, listen to the concerns on that side of it, we are more than happy to have you in there. You know, I heard some rumblings to the effect during session that there were people on the other side of the, on the other party that just wanted to kind of do harm to her because she was on the Democratic side. And that's disappointing, because in the end, you're hurting the people who depend on FDACs. And a lot of those people are not necessarily Democrats. They're Republicans. So you go try to hurt the Department of Ag, you're hurting people who vote Republican quite a bit.
I think Nikki is walking a tough position because, yes, she's got your world, the FDACs, which I've never used that an acronym before, but she's also tweeting about the abortion debate. Like she said, State Representative Mike Hill said that he wanted to put forward a bill similar to what was in Alabama, and she retweeted on top of that, I'm going to fight this like hell. And so it's tough for her because she wants to go along and get along as a member of the cabinet and, you know, be part of a new era in Tallahassee. But then on the other side, she's the statewide leader of the Democrats. And they're like, hey, we don't want this crazy crap coming here to Florida.
But she's the statewide leader of the Democrats. So she has to use her platform. It's her job. And I also would like to say, as soon as a viable candidate files to run against Representative Mike Hill, I will be happy to max out in contributions to you for every member of our family. Because as long as you're going to propose that legislation in this state, you have no room in our legislature.
Yeah, Representative Hill is a... We tried to beat him the last time. I make no bones about it. That's the one Republican. Jim Rimes helped me. He was in charge of the political committee. No, you weren't? Oh, okay.
I got to get rid of this microphone.
No, you were not in charge of that one.
Don't remember that.
Have you ever worked for a Democrat? Have you ever been in a Democrat on Democrat primary?
No.
Would you even know what to do? Like, I mean, the messaging or something like low taxes. And they're like, no, you're wrong. Like,
it's a completely different mindset. It'd be like running a campaign on Mars, I think.
Wow.
Would you know how to even like poll for a Democrat to see if they were doing well? Like, what type of polling questions would Jim Rimes write?
Well, sure, you can poll. I mean, you see what the issues are in the campaign and you could poll that, get the sample right. But it would be, just in terms of campaigning and the mindset and the constituencies that you're going after are completely different than, especially in a primary. And obviously in a general election, you deal with them, but in a primary, it's completely different.
You've kind of reinvented yourself, not reinvented, but you continue to evolve. You're like the phone guy now for the last, 8 years or so. And now Supernova, you guys are getting into the digital space probably as heavily as anybody. Where do you see, the 2020 campaigns going from a blocking and tackling kind of way? What are the trends out there?
It's very interesting. We've got, Zach Monahan runs our digital operation at Supernova. And, what we try to do is everything is more targeted. You're able to take the voter file, target the voters, whether it's on Facebook or IP targeted on different mediums, and you can drive in a message. So video is very important online, but you can cut different video segments and you can start to target your message digitally the same way that you would mail. So you could talk to Second Amendment voters, you can talk to pro-environment voters, you can talk to voters that care about taxes digitally with different ad streams, and it works really well.
So it's interesting. You have seen a lot of changes in how we campaign and how we elect people to office. What do you think is the single most beneficial improvement to the political election process that has happened in your time of running campaigns? Some people would probably see cell phones as a benefit, where others, it's a detriment because it's harder to poll because no one has a home phone anymore. And some people see social media as a benefit, but again, not everyone's on there, so you're not quite sure who you're targeting. You used to be able to rely on newspaper endorsements to be really helpful, but newspapers are dying. So how far is a newspaper endorsement getting you? What do you think has been the best change in campaigns?
I think it's, like I was saying, the best change is the ability to target voters on a much more granular level across all of the different types of advertising. What you're always concerned with when, Peter and I back in the day, okay, let's buy 1,000 gross rating points of television, and you're going to talk to a lot of people that you don't need to talk to. They're not registered to vote, or you're not getting them the right message. Where now, when you're starting to see things to stratify a lot with, you know, you have the network, you have cable, you have digital, and you can target the messaging more appropriately. You know you're getting more lead on target that way. I think.
Do you feel like, in a way, that you were doing what the Russians were doing before the Russians were doing it, in terms, not in a malevolent way, but like when we hear about some of this stuff, like, oh, they're accessing the voter file, we're like, okay, that's the easiest, just go down there and pay $5 for the floppy disk.
Yeah, it's a public record. I mean, it's out there. I mean, the Russians were doing things with a malicious intent, and they were essentially falsely advertising.
And what's wrong with that? I'm sorry. Just for the, let's get that out there for the record.
I mean, I see it really as taking something that we used to do, like direct mail, and moving it into another medium. So I don't really see it as being that different.
And I got to even go with the qualifier about malicious. Like, I know that a lot of the direct mail that we've sent, I hate to say it, it wasn't coming out of a puppy dogs and apple pies kind of place. It was, there was some malicious intent in that as well, where, you know, like I remember sending a piece about Frank Farkas and Margot Fisher in 98. The Times wrote about it. It was a person breaking into the house, and it's, if Margot Fisher can't keep your house safe, you know, and you're like, little old women were scared. And so, and I especially like now with the Facebook stuff, like people come to us all the time and they're like, can you do X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, are you with the FBI? Do I need to tap you down? Because what they're asking for is what the kids in Macedonia were doing, which is geofencing an area, sending in a message to basically to agitate somebody in a way. And that's what a lot of what the Russians were doing was, hey, we're going to send to white people, we're going to send, you know, pictures of black people taking their guns. And that's supposed to scare them and vote for Trump. I don't know. It's just, it's dangerous. And so on that note, what's Uber doing about that? What?
Stephanie, you actually have to talk on the podcast.
This is not.
You know what? I'll take it another direction where you can talk. But it's going to get a little serious for a second. It is Memorial Day.
Okay.
So we're going to get slightly serious.
Yes.
Can you share something about our old colleague and your dear friend, Freda King's son, Brandon?
I appreciate you bringing it up.
It is Memorial Day, and he lost his life serving our country. So let's...
I would love to. Private first class, Brandon King, everybody, toast.
Here's to Brandon.
To Brandon, who was killed in Afghanistan. He is the son of Freda King, who worked in the governor's scheduling office, Governor Chris and Governor Bush. He was a dear, dear friend to everyone. He visited the office frequently. Obviously, a very close to Colonel Glenn Sutphin, who was at that time the liaison to the Florida National Guard. Mm-hmm. And so we'll never forget that. It was, I feel like it was just the other day when Freda received the call that her son had passed away, that was killed, excuse me, not passed away, that was killed in Afghanistan and was in the governor's office. And it's something that we were forever bonded over. And we remember him every year in July. She has a scholarship fund for him.
We have contributed to his scholarship fund.
And so it's our way of just always remembering Freda and remembering her son. And their
can you tell us how people can donate? Do you know how people can donate to his scholarship fund? And we'll also put it on our website.
You've got it. It's the Brandon King Scholarship Fund. It's done through the Telsey Community College Foundation. They have a Facebook set up, and they also have an event. So we'll get you the link to that.
Perfect. And we'll put it on our social media channels.
That'd
and
be
share
awesome.
That. What a great
oh,
way
I appreciate
to
appreciate it.
Well, as much as it's lovely to be together with our friends.
That's right.
And to be having fun in the sun, it is about those who gave all.
That's right.
Freedom is not free. All right. And so I think we're going to wrap this podcast up here. We're going to do one little round robin. Love to know. I'm going to ask real easy. Today, Memorial Day weekend is always the beginning of summer. So let's ask everybody, what is on the docket for you for summer? Like, give us 30 seconds about where we can find you. Let's start with Derek Houston. Where will you be this summer? Where can we find you? We know that you're going to be cashing checks and snapping necks for Houston Taylor Law Firm, but what are you up to this summer?
I'll be working, and if I'm not, I'll be on my boat.
Amanda?
Or be on the boat with Derek. But we're also going to Charleston in a week and then Montana for a week. So we're
and if Peter has
that.
His way, you'll end up in Barcelona or London with us at some point because, you know, we don't like to go to Europe without you guys.
That's true.
Like to vacation with the Schwartzes.
At the beginning or the end, we will probably be there.
All right, Anella Joyce, where do you think you're going to be this summer? What do you have planned?
The Disney cruise.
And who will you see on the Disney cruise?
The Panther.
Awesome.
I'm going to see
aqua course today at the pool.
Excellent work, Ella Joyce. Jimmy, where will we see you?
Well, working, getting ready, loading up candidates for next cycle. And then my promise to myself is to use the boat a little bit more this summer. So out on the sandbar by the tripod off the St. Mark's Lighthouse.
Nice. Smith, where will you be Ubering to?
Breaking on the podcast. So my son and I will be relocating to Tallahassee, Florida this summer.
Breaking news.
Goodbye, Miami.
Please don't tweet that until Tuesday, Wednesday. Let us get that out there.
Yeah, please let us be the first to release that. Huge news.
Honey Bunches, what do you have? I know what the big things we've got lined up, but what's something that you're really looking forward to this summer?
I am looking forward to a lot more downtime and a lot less schedules. I'm looking forward to quiet late nights together. I really love the late night swims, and I'm really looking forward to, most of all, what is premiering tomorrow, Ella?
A movie!
That's right. Ella and I were extras in a Hallmark movie. Do you remember the name of our movie, Ella?
Love Under the Sun or Love in the Sun?
It's Love in the Sun. You were pretty close. And it premieres at 9 p.m. on Memorial Day. What did we film? What were we doing in the movie? What event did we attend?
The Orchid Festival.
That's right. We were at the Orchid Festival. And were you at a special arts and craft station?
Yeah.
Perfect. So we've got that. We've got the Disney cruise. I will be in Tallahassee several times taping the show. I always have the summertime conference retreat schedule. If you are at a 3-star and above hotel and having a corporate retreat and you need a speaker, I am... Three-star Marriott brand, 4-star otherwise. You know, my preferred hotel is the Amelia Island Ritz. I recommend that you have your conference there. I will be happy to come speak to your group as long as you take care of room and amenities. Of course, room being, you know, a king-size suite and a day extra stay for that. Talking to you, John Johnson and Travis Blanton. You know, I usually like that. But thank you very much for indulging us for this very special episode of He Said, She Said, the Happy Hour Edition. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, and we'll talk to you in the next episode.